Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Coca-Cola FEMSA's second quarter 2017 conference call. As a reminder, today's conference is being recorded, and all participants are in a listen-only mode. At the request of the company, we will open up the conference for questions and answers after the presentation. During this conference call, management may discuss certain forward-looking statements concerning Coca-Cola FEMSA's future performance and should be considered as good faith estimates made by the company. These forward-looking statements reflect management's expectations and are based upon current available data. Actual results are suspect to future events and uncertainties, which can materially impact the company's actual performance. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Mr. Hector Trevino, Coca-Cola FEMSA's Chief Financial Officer. Please go ahead, Mr. Trevino.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us to discuss our second quarter 2017 results. In the second quarter of 2017, we continue to deliver solid top-line results in the face of a challenging consumer environment in some of our territories, supported by our portfolio and pricing initiatives, our point-of-sale execution, and the rollout of our affordability initiatives and financial discipline across our operations. As we previously announced, commencing February 2017, we started consolidating KOF Philippines financial results in our financial statements. As a result of this consolidation, our results for the second quarter of 2017 will reflect a reduction in our share of the profits of associates and joint ventures accounted for using the equity method, particularly recorded in our Mexico and Central America division. On the face of challenging macroeconomic and consumer environment, we rely on our affordable presentations and multi-serve presentation strategies during the quarter. Except for Argentina, our volumes perform better than our transactions across our territories. Behavior which was reflected across our core carbonated soft drinks and non-carbonated beverage brands. Building on the previous year's growth of more than 7%, Mexico reported stable volumes performance for the second quarter. This performance was offset by a contraction in volume, mainly in South America, driven by a difficult consumer environment in Brazil, Colombia, and Venezuela. In the Philippines, we saw a slight contraction in volumes and transactions on the back of a strong 2016, which grew volumes by 10%. As a geographically diversified company, we face different economic challenges in each country. In the first half of 2017, Mexico continued to experience higher inflation that impacted our consumer and higher fuel costs. However, we enjoyed less inflationary pressure in South America, which was not consistently reflected in consumption growth across the region. In this environment, we were able to continue our pricing strategy in line with or above inflation. This enabled us to increase our top line, offsetting our overall decline in volumes. For the quarter, our consolidated reported revenues increased by more than 25%, and our operating income increased by 8%. These figures include our results from the Philippines and the recently acquired Brazilian territory of Bompar. During the quarter, our consolidated comparable revenues rose 1.9%, driven mainly by price increases in Mexico, Brazil, Colombia, and Argentina, while our comparable gross profit grew 3.8%. High operating expenses, including one-time expenses, led to flat operating income year over year. We continue implementing our hedging strategies, which reduce volatility in our variable cost structure, resulting from currency and raw material price volatility. I will briefly discuss the highlights for each of our operations. In Mexico, we continue to experience resilient consumer behavior despite higher inflation rates, driven mainly by higher gasoline and diesel prices that affect the disposable income. We delivered positive volume growth, building on last year's performance of 7.3%, and we achieved high single-digit top-line growth versus the previous year by maintaining pricing ahead of inflation. As part of our initiatives to offer innovative alternatives to our consumers, our launch of Coca-Cola Sin Azúcar or No Sugar has proven successful. Since its February launching, we have doubled the volume that Coca-Cola Zero had over the same period, more than 11 million unit cases, further increasing the mix of the non-caloric beverages within our colas portfolio. Within our flavor sparkling beverage category, our core brands deliver double-digit growth. At the beginning of June, we launched our new 255-milliliter lean can for the traditional brand Sidran Mundet to offer a broader variety of choices for our consumers. Our still beverage portfolio continues positive performance with high single-digit volume growth, including double-digit growth of Santa Clara dairy products. In this quarter, our Mexico top-line growth enabled us to partially contain higher costs and expenses, mainly due to an unfavorable FX hedge, higher sugar prices, and incremental diesel and gasoline prices. This led to a mid-single-digit operating income growth. Given the particularities of the sugar market in Mexico, which does not follow international markets, we have pressures in the quarter, increasing our sugar prices more than 20%. In Central America, our volumes declined 3.6% on the back of high single-digit growth last year of 7.4%, mainly Costa Rica and Panama. This decline was mainly driven by brand Coca-Cola. However, Fuze Tea, Powerade, and the introduction of Monster provided a positive performance. Additionally, we benefit from year-over-year resin and sweetener prices that improve our gross margin. We continue to strengthen our route-to-market platform in Central America to improve execution throughout the region. In the short term, this strategy increases our cost to serve, impacting our operating income. However, it will let us capture top-line opportunities. Our South America division continues to face a complicated consumer environment with positive signs of recovery in Brazil and Argentina. In Brazil, we continue to expect improvements in the second half of 2017, with the economy gaining traction in 2018. In fact, June was the first month with positive volume after more than a year of monthly declines. Our second quarter results show a better trend compared with the first quarter, even with a volume contraction of close to 10% on an organic basis. Including Bompar, our volume grew by more than 12%. For the quarter, Brazil had a positive financial impact, driven by an appreciation of the Brazilian real and better aluminum and PET prices, which offset the higher sugar hedge prices as compared with the spot market. Thanks to better point-of-sale execution, price compliance, and cost-expense efficiencies, we have been able to achieve encouraging profitability in Brazil with an operating margin expansion. In the innovation front, we launched Fanta Guaraná to offer our consumers a lower sugar alternative and revitalize our flavor carbonated soft drink category. Our integration of Bompar continues on track. We improved point-of-sale execution rapidly. We are successfully expanding our portfolio returnable PET presentations with important gains in volume and coverage throughout the territory, and we are capturing pricing opportunities in all of our beverage categories. We received a letter from Heineken at the beginning of July informing its decision to terminate the commercial relationship for the distribution of its products with all the bottlers of the Coca-Cola system in Brazil, effective October 31st of this year. We are currently studying the implementation of possible actions, and in the meantime, we are looking for a constructive dialogue with Heineken. In Colombia, the economic environment remains challenging, and in this quarter, we continue facing adverse weather conditions with more rainfall and lower temperatures than 2016. Improved pricing in line with inflation, better sugar and PET prices, combined with the year-over-year appreciation of the Colombian peso, enable us to partially mitigate the effect of volume contraction for the quarter. We will continue to focus on aggressively reducing our costs and expenses, improving the affordability of our portfolio with returnable PET presentations, and increasing our mix of non-caloric options for our consumers. This quarter, we recorded an extraordinary provision for claims with the sewer service company in Colombia. This provision accounted for approximately $4 million, which was additional to $7 million we registered in previous months. In Argentina, we reported a low single-digit contraction in volume, but positive growth in transactions. This performance reflected our strategy of focusing on developing single-serve and affordable presentations. Together with transaction growth, our strategy of pricing ahead of inflation delivered positive top-line double-digit growth. Our sparkling beverage portfolio's volume was relatively flat compared with last year, while generating mid-single-digit growth in flavors. Our still beverage category achieved double-digit volume growth, driven mainly by juices. Our Argentine operation increased its gross profit, supported by better PET and aluminum prices, which compensated for higher sweetener cost, a favorable foreign exchange hedge in 2016, and larger expenses related to labor costs. In Venezuela, we continue to face an even more complicated environment with accelerated inflation and contracting consumption. Our volumes decreased 60%. In May, the exchange rate moved in average from 717 bolivars to 2010. 180% devaluation, ending the quarter at 264 bolivars per dollar, a further 30% depreciation. We use this exchange rate to consolidate the results of our Venezuelan operation for the quarter, as well as for our balance sheet figures. In the face of this exceptionally challenging environment, we are focused on cash flow generation in local currency to maintain our operations running, and we remain committed to satisfying our Venezuelan consumers' diverse needs. Moving on to our Philippines operation, for comparable purposes, we are describing the performance of this operation as if it were consolidated last year, considering the full 3 months year over year. For the quarter, our volume contracted in low single digits on the back of double-digit volume growth during the same period of 2016. As part of our commercial strategy, we have been upsizing key CSD packages intended to reinforce the attractiveness of our portfolio. As a consequence, in the first half of 2017, pricing has remained relatively flat compared with the same period of last year. Commodity prices were better than the previous year, offsetting a top-line decline and leading to a lower contraction in gross profit. Colas continued to perform positively, offsetting a contraction in flavors in our sparkling beverage portfolio. Additionally, we achieved accelerated growth of close to 18% in our water portfolio. We launched Wilkins Delight fruit-infused water in 250 and 425 milliliter bottles and three flavors, apple, pomelo, and orange. Moreover, our non-carbonated beverage category, led by juices under the Minute Maid Fresh brand, grew close to 11%, offset by a decline in powder products. Our Philippines operations operating income also increased, driven by our cost efficiencies and reduced operating expenses. Thanks to our efforts, we look to achieve a much leaner, more profitable and sustainable business. Now, regarding our financial results, as we announced in May, as part of the Bompar acquisition, Coca-Cola FEMSA issued approximately 27.9 million KOF Series L shares. Considering the new number of shares and net income attributable to equity holders of the company, earnings per share for the quarter were 1.07 pesos per share, an increase of 10.5% compared with the same period of last year. Consistent with our financial discipline, we issued 8.5 billion pesos in a 10-year bond at a fixed rate of 7.87% and 1.5 billion pesos in a 5-year bond at a variable rate of TIIE plus 25 basis points. This issuance received credit rating of AAA from Moody's and AAA from Standard & Poor's. As recently announced, we will use the proceeds from this issuance to partially refinance the 2.375% U.S. dollar-denominated notes due in 2018, with the objective of maintaining our net leverage ratio below 2x. We continue our strategy of having a zero net dollar debt exposure, mitigating the impact of currency exchange volatility on our net income by swapping our U.S. dollar debt to Mexican pesos and Brazilian reais. Now let me close with some key remarks. Coca-Cola FEMSA is coming through a challenging second quarter with significant progress on all the strategic fronts. Coca-Cola FEMSA's organic results were below last year, given lower volumes and profits in Colombia and Central America. Mexico had positive volumes. We took price last June. However, excluding the results from the Philippines in last year's results, operating income grew mid-single digits despite of being affected by forex and increased sugar and fuel costs. In Colombia, despite volume contraction, we continue gaining market share with brand Coca-Cola growing, supported by our returnable strategy. Operating income was also affected by one-time expenses. Brazil shows strong profitability growth, offsetting other countries' results, with June being the first month with positive volume after more than a year, prices in line with inflation, and operating income margin expanding. In Argentina, volume declined 1.8%, changing trend as compared to first quarter of this year and with a positive outlook going ahead. The Philippines show volume decline but improving profitability. However, we expect softer second half driven by weather seasonality and pressure in sweeteners, which will lead to mid-single-digit operating income for the full year of 2017. We continue to show progress in all strategic and operation fronts. Resetting Central America competitive edge, including the introduction of pre-sale in Guatemala, increasing point-of-sale execution and driving affordability through all territories, focusing on returnable presentations, growing non-caloric mix, and continuous progress in our digital platform. Now, given the depreciation of the official foreign exchange in Venezuela from approximately 700 to 2,700 bolivars per dollar, we registered a non-cash item that affected our net income by 1.3 billion pesos. Excluding this effect, our EPS would have increased close to 50%. In the financial front, our comprehensive financial results decreased 35%. This is the result of our strategy of swapping our net dollar debt exposure to Mexican pesos and Brazilian reais. Therefore, although we have higher interest rate in these currencies, we will not have the volatility of FX fluctuation in the income statement. We continue our financial discipline by issuing Mexican bonds to refinance partially 2018 U.S. dollar bond to a make whole we will pay in August of this year. Guided by our strategic framework, we are committed to reinforce our leading market position as a global beverage company through our diversified portfolio, to transform our operating model through our centers of excellence, and to drive a cultural evolution that will enable us to continue capturing both organic and inorganic growth and creating sustainable value for our shareholders now and into the future. Thank you for your continued trust and support. Operator, I would like to open up the call for questions.
Absolutely. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Please limit yourself to one question. And again, that is star 1 for questions at this time. And we will take our first question from Pedro Leduc from J.P. Morgan.
Hello, everybody. Good morning. Thank you for taking the question. Quickly on South America, first you mentioned Brazil, June being the first positive month for volume in a while. I just want to make sure you're talking about a comparable volume growth. And then second, what in the view has been driving that? Is it more promotional activity, better macro, more rational environment? And assuming this continues, what do you expect to have an effect on margins in the second half of the year? Thank you.
Good morning, Pedro. Yes, that number that I mentioned is comparable without excluding the numbers of Bompar. I think that mainly has to do with, I think this multi-factor. One very important that has to do with us is that now we are at the top of the scale in execution metrics in the Coca-Cola system. Remember that 2 or 3 quarters ago we were kind of in the lower ranks of on the execution metrics, and now we are at the top, the number one. Volume for the month of June, without Bompar, basically increased a little bit more than 5%. I think that also has to do with some macroeconomic data. We are seeing inflation in Brazil coming down to close to 3%, interest rates coming down importantly also, and I think that this bodes well for our expectation that the second half of the year in Brazil we'll see a better macro environment and potentially a better performance of our operation there. The integration of Bompar goes very well. As mentioned in these opening remarks, we are increasing prices. Importantly, Bompar was kind of an outlier in the pricing front compared to the rest of the Coca-Cola system. So we are bringing all these prices to a new level, and also very importantly, which has also helped us in the old Brazil, is all this effort for affordability through returnable presentations. So I think that Brazil is in good shape to start to improve. My feeling, Pedro, is that we have hit the bottom, and we will continue. From here on, we will see better performance in Brazil.
Our next question comes from Benjamin Thier from Barclays. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, and well, thank you very much for taking my question. I'd like to follow up on the performance in Mexico, and I remember in the past we've been talking a lot about the focus on transactions and the growth there. Now, could you elaborate a little bit what was driving why on the sparkling category in specific transactions during the quarter were actually down, but at the same time you get an increase in volume. So was that a consumer habit to go to larger bottles, or what was driving the decline on transactions while at the same time still reaching a minor increase on volume? So just a little bit of a clarification here on the Mexico performance. That would be much appreciated. Thanks.
Good morning, Benjamin. Yes, I think that the formula that we like to see in every territory is for transactions growing more than volume, and volume growing more than the sugar content that we have in our beverages, given all the trends and the tax implications that we have. And obviously, we would like to see revenues increasing ahead of transactions. I think that last part, the pricing front, we are doing a good job. In Mexico and basically every country, every territory except Argentina this quarter, we saw volumes growing more than transactions. Every territory has its own characteristics, but speaking of specifically about Mexico and related to the question, what we are seeing in Mexico is a very important growth of the 3-liter returnable PET presentation, with growth close to between 8% and 9%. We continue to see growth in some of the smaller sizes, but the important growth in that presentation is what move us away from this formula that we like to see. We'll continue to foster single-serve transactions. We are introducing, as we mentioned, small cans for some of the flavors. In this quarter, it was important for us to launch the Sidral Mundet. I think that one specific characteristic that is also important in Mexico for you to take into consideration. This important growth in 3-liter returnable, it happens mainly in the Valley of Mexico, which is where most of the competitors are present. We have PepsiCo, we have Red Cola, we have Carritos, and all of these brands. So the consumer is looking for this affordability for the family meal occasion, and they are liking this presentation. It's different in the territories that we have in the north and the center of the country, where we have a more balanced growth. But that's basically, I guess, the answer for your question is the important growth that we saw in 3-liter returnable PET, especially in the Valley of Mexico.
Next question comes from Lauren Torres from UBS. Please go ahead.
Yes. Hi, everyone. Hector, I was just hoping, to the extent that you can, elaborate a bit about those comments you made with respect to the Heineken relationship. I understand that you do have a few more years left of the contract, and maybe the last conference call or so you've talked about, you know, exploring options if you do lose that relationship. So can you just talk about what you mean by this constructive dialogue, and if this relationship does go away as early as October of this year, how are you thinking about managing that distribution? Thank you.
Good morning, Lorraine. Remember that when Heineken acquired Kirin, they mentioned that they were evaluating this alternative of using Kirin distribution system to serve the marketing in Brazil. So we received this letter in July. Heineken is of the opinion that they need to give a six-month advice for them to terminate the agreement. Our position is that the contract is effective until 2022, and that's what I mean by analyzing our actions. We are reviewing all the documentation together with Heineken. We have had several meetings with them, and when I say we, meaning we together with the rest of the Coca-Cola system and the Coca-Cola company in Brazil. So the Coca-Cola system and the Coca-Cola bottlers and the Coca-Cola company are together in this, and we are analyzing this alternative. We firmly believe that the contract terminates in 2022. Heineken has a different idea, and we will have to look at our options there.
Our next question comes from Martha Shelton from BBVA. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking the question. It's regarding some of the margin pressure that we saw in Mexico during the second quarter. I just wanted to get a sense for recognizing that Mexico sugar prices are up more than 20%, you mentioned earlier, but I wanted to get a sense for to what extent you attributed the margin pressure to FX hedges and what extent you attributed that to the higher Mexico sugar prices. Thanks so much.
Good morning, Marta. There are three main reasons for the pressure on the margins in Mexico. One is these sugar prices. We have hedged our prices, especially with respect to the high fructose corn syrup, which is around 50% of our seasonals in Mexico. And for those, we have already, you know, covered the prices since the beginning of the year for the full year. In the other half, what is happening is that after all the discussions with the U.S. about the dumping of sugar into the U.S., there was a spike on prices of standard sugar in Mexico. And the standard sugar price for the average for the full year is used as for what is called the contrato ley, which is the contract whereby the sugar cane growers are paid in Mexico, and they are paid a percentage of the price of the standard sugar price. If I remember correctly, it's around 56% of that price. Is what you pay to the guys that grow the sugar cane. So because of this spike in sugar prices that we've seen during the last quarter, that has affected the cost of the sugar cane that is being bought by all the mills. So all the mills will have a cost increase that obviously they will translate that to the final consumer. So I hope that I explained this correctly, or that you that I transmitted this message to correctly. A spike in the standard sugar price that is affecting the formula whereby the industry, the sugar mills, pay to the cane growers. That's one of the reasons for this margin contraction. The other one has to do with the fuel price increases that at the beginning of the year we mentioned that the estimate that we have for the full year was around 300 million pesos because of just the fuel increase and for us having a very important fleet of trucks delivering products to Aruba. The third element is the fact that we have hedged close to 60% of our dollar-denominated needs for the year at exchange rates that are around 20 pesos per dollar, which at the moment when we were doing those hedges looked very well, but obviously with the new spot price, we have a negative mark to market there. We are continuing to extend this program, but you know that we basically go 12 months ahead of time. We do see a lot of volatility in the future given all the election periods. And it's important that you know that we continue to do hedges at the present levels to start hedging some of our costs next year. So that's another element that is affecting the profitability of Mexico. In the accounting numbers that you see, the way we reported, we also have the effect that the Philippines, the participation that we have in the Philippines, since it was owned by the holding that is a Mexican holding, was included in the Mexico results last year. And that is no longer there, and we are excluding that number to the Asia division. All in all, Mexico has close to 1% volume growth and close to 5% operating income growth, which I think is good. It has a small margin contraction given those three effects that you described, the FX, sugar, and fuel. But because of the important price increases that we have, especially in June, we were able to basically compensate most of the cost pressure. Starting July, it's important for everyone to have this. Starting in July, remember that we have also extra cost of concentrate in the agreement that we have with the Coca-Cola company. Remember that was triggered in July 1st, and we'll have to start paying a higher cost of concentrate during this, in a three-stage in the next 3 years, no? Basically 1 percentage point increase every year, no? Thank you, Mark.
Our next question comes from Isabella Simonatu from Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Hector. One follow-up regarding the contract with Heineken. Just so we try to understand a little bit better, since you received a date from Heineken to terminate the contract, do you understand that on their side, they already know how to do it? I mean, or are still discussing if there's going to be done on a bottler basis, what the expectation of the penalty fee for breaking up the contract, or do you still think this is up for discussion and very preliminary? And given, and if it is preliminary, do you think this date could be postponed? I mean, they said October 31st, but eventually this could be delayed. This will be my first question. Thank you.
Good morning, Isabella. We have been having meetings with Heineken, as I mentioned, together with some of the rest of the bottlers, just to discuss the different alternatives and for every party to position or to put their position forward. Their position is that they can terminate the agreement with 6 months' notice. And our position is that we still have five more years to go. And it's very difficult at this point to predict what is going to happen. So, one alternative is if we are at an impasse, that the contract might not be terminated in October 31st, but that will depend on how these conversations evolve. And obviously, an important element of this conversation is, in any case, is what the compensation for early termination would be. But this is still very preliminary. So we will keep you informed as we advance on these negotiations. Thank you, Salas.
Next question comes from Antonio Gonzalez of Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, Hector. I wanted to follow up on the comments that you did on the press release about your enhanced commercial platform, and you make some comments about improved POS execution and expense savings, etc. So I wanted to ask, where are you in the implementation in the rest of the countries outside of Mexico? And if there is any chance you share with us, what are the specific routines or enhancements that have been particularly relevant through the implementation? And just finally, in the case of Mexico, do you see upside? You already discussed the margin outlook for the country and so forth. Do you see upside for these improved commercial platform to lead you to flattish or even improving margins in Mexico in the short term? Or given the dynamics that you described earlier, the most feasible outlook would be still to see margin compression for the remainder of the year in Mexico? Thank you.
Good morning, Tony. Let me try to explain in a nutshell. It's a complex theme, everything that has to do with digital strategies, but let me start with a commercial digital strategy. What we have is that for every point of sale that we have, for example, in Mexico, which is around 800,000 different clients that we visit two or three times a week, we have many different data. Even some of the information we have that has to do with weather and location and socioeconomic levels around the area, we have close to 7,000 data points for each outlet. So, with all of that information, we are working together with external consultants in mining that information. And the idea is to have a much more granular segmentation. What do I mean by granular? In the past, we were doing promotional activities for large areas of a city or even the whole city. And now we have information, with all the information that we have from the presellers and the delivery guys that now have an intelligent device, like an iPhone. It's a different device, but it's an intelligent smartphone. They give us a lot of information that give us the possibility of starting to answer very quickly promotional activities that before we need like 1 month to prepare in a more, let me call it, shotgun approach. Now we can do very granular targeted promotional activities and answer these threats in 3 days. We do post-mortem of also such activities, and we learn and we self-feed the information to start learning what kind of promotional activities are having results and which ones are just giving some extra money to the retailer with no additional effect on the final consumer. So the combination of the pre-seller and the delivery guy having an intelligent phone and all this data lake that we have that start giving us better information with the algorithms that we have the device conceptually give us a much better top line, either because of you improve a little bit your volume or because you don't give specific promotions to a retailer when that promotion is not needed. We have it now 100% in Mexico. We are rolling that out in Brazil and Colombia. So by the end of this year, probably half of 2018, we will have this rollout everywhere. That has to do with the commercial platform. Now, in production and supply chain, we also have an integrated digital strategy whereby we have much better information on the production sites with some data, like, for example, in the wastewater treatment, we are reducing around 20% the consumption of electricity because we have better, tuning of all of this with digital models that predict the kind of oxygen and bubbles that the bacteria that is there in the water treatment needs, and saving on electricity for the pumps. We're also saving a lot on the chemical that is used in the water treatment. We are doing a lot of centralized routines for predictive maintenance. We are reducing significantly the number of accidents that we have, and we are tracking that very thoroughly, basically to with the objective to get to zero. So the centralized planning with respect to all the production facilities is working well for us and bringing some savings. And also, and lastly, we have also what we call the logistics systems, where now we have a much better information about the vehicles that are running in the 10 countries with GPS and a lot of information with respect to the engine performance, the driving habits, and all of that, and even using systems similar to Waze to have a route that is variable during the day that saves traffic time to the driver, and therefore having more hours to be offering our products to the clients. So I'll say that those are the three main efforts in this area. We basically have all of these three in Mexico, and we are deploying this in Brazil as we speak. And the next stage is Colombia, and then we'll go to Central America and Argentina. No? The Philippines will be the last portion of the last element on all this strategy. What do we expect from this? We will expect better management of all these three, the commercial activity, the production cost, and everything that has to do with logistics. How will that affect margins for Mexico? I think that excluding the surprise of the sugar prices, and as I mentioned, on half of the sweeteners that we need in Mexico, which are related to sugarcane, that's the only element that caught us a little bit by surprise. And I would say that a little bit the hedges that we have on the FX, not that we had not expect the spot rate to be at this level. With having said that, I see margins in the second half for Mexico being at more or less at the levels that we have. It's a very profitable operation. In the second quarter, including everything that I mentioned, and including the effect of sugar and everything, because of the price increases that we have basically a 60% reduction on margins in Mexico, 60 basis points. So my expectation is the second half will be flat compared to this second quarter, given the pressures that we are seeing on sugar that we continue to have in the second half of the year. Thank you, Tom.
Our next question comes from Felipe Ucros from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Scotiabank, yeah, thank you. Hector, good morning. Thanks for the space for questions. I guess my question is surrounding Colombia and Argentina. It seems that Colombia is still suffering quite a bit, and maybe the comments were a little more geared towards the weather issues that have been happening in the country. But I wanted to ask you, do you feel that the VAT effect is subsiding? We've talked to other consumer companies that seem to feel that the VAT effect is finally kind of fading off and that they really expect things to get better in the second half of the year. And then the second one is Argentina, where it seems like the opposite is happening to you guys. We're talking to some consumer companies that are still suffering quite a bit, but it seems that you guys are doing fairly well. I wanted to see if you could get a little deeper on those two operations. Thank you.
Good morning, Felipe. Yes, I think that Colombia continues to be an area of important focus of top management. I think that it's important and fair to say that in Colombia, we saw growth of brand Coca-Cola versus last year, which I think is very important. We are seeing gains in market share, which clearly signal to us that the consumer is still not there. I think that the effect is, as you say, subsiding a little bit because first quarter we have a contraction of around 25% in volumes, and this quarter we saw basically a contraction of around 11. So when you take, at the end of the day, with all the cost control that we have in Colombia and all the efforts that we have had there, at the end of the day, it's a top-line story. We are increasing prices. We have good affordability because of the introduction of returnable PET since the last 2 years. But you have an 11% contraction in volume, a little bit better pricing. And when you take that contraction in revenues and times the marginal contribution, that's basically the reduction that you have in operating income. That clearly signals that Colombia is in good shape on the cost and expenses side. It's basically for us to find the opportunity to start growing volumes and start recruiting more consumers. That's the strategy where we are focusing. I think that the consumer in Colombia is still suffering from this 3% increase in value-added tax. It's probably shying away a little bit from our category and going more into natural juices or water, tap water and things like that. But it looks like although the volumes are still decreasing, they are decreasing at a slower pace than what we had in the past. We were unfortunate to have this one-time event with the sewer system in Colombia, where it's a very long fight that we have since 2010. So we finally got to this agreement with the authorities, a settlement, and we are taking that hit and let's turn the page on that front. In Argentina, we feel that things are better than in Colombia in the sense that the consumer is coming back to the category importantly. Even though we have a 1% reduction in volume compared to last year, but the first quarter of this year we have an 8% decline in volume. So we are confident that Argentina is doing the right has the similar to Colombia, that we have the right strategies in the marketplace to start recapturing consumer occasions and recruiting more consumers and growing the consumer base. Similar to Colombia, costs and expenses are very well controlled in Argentina. We have the impact of very tough labor negotiations. In Argentina always the union negotiations are always tough, but we have good margins and increasing margins in Argentina, which give us confidence that the things are being managed in an appropriate manner. Thank you, Felipe.
Our next question comes from Alex Roberts from Citi. Please go ahead.
Hi, everybody. Thank you very much. I wanted to focus my question around the Philippines, please. You mentioned in the prepared remarks that you expect for the year a mid-single-digit growth of operating income. from a softer second half. But I guess if I'm looking at the press release, right, if you're up 23 first half, I mean, is it fair to assume that you're expecting a measurable decline year on year in the operating income in the second half in the Philippines, or am I just not getting that correct? And about your characterization for a softer second half in the Philippines, is that kind of comp year on year comp related, or is there an operating trends that you could share with us? And finally, you know, locally we're hearing that a sugar tax hike is something that the Philippine Congress is looking to potentially vote on in a very short term. Any kind of indications that you're getting around this from your operators would be appreciated. Thanks very much.
Good morning, Alex. Let me clarify that, probably the prepared remarks, I was not that clear. What I was referring to in the Philippines is that what I'm expecting is mid-single-digit margins of EBITDA, during the full year. And I'm mentioning this because, remember, at the very beginning when we were consolidating the Philippines, or started to consolidate the Philippines, I mentioned that I will expect between 4 to 5% EBIT margin for the full year, and we have a 6% EBIT margin in the first quarter, 9% in the second quarter, and I'm still looking at that important growth. Now coming back to your question, important growth in EBIT, but with margins around 5 to 6% for the full year. That will call for margins in the second half being smaller than what we have in the first half. I basically didn't want to leave everyone with the impression that we will continue to grow margins at the rate we saw during the first and the second quarter. We will see double-digit growth in operating income, but with margins around 5%, 6% is my call for the full year. What is going to happen, what usually happens in the second half, It's normally we have much more rain because of the typhoons. We are struggling with this idea of being able to import high fructose from China that was helping us at the end of last year and the beginning of this year with the cost of sweeteners. There is a big push by the sugarcane producers in the Philippines to stop this importation of high fructose. So that's been discussed also with the government authorities. And as you said, the Congress is reviewing this proposal to have a tax on drinks. There are several versions and it's difficult to predict which one is going to be the final one, if any, because maybe one, because again, the sugar cane producers have a lot of power also in the Philippines, so they are pushing for no tax, but some of the Congress persons are even pushing for taxes on drinks, with sugar or without sugar, as a way of collecting taxes. So obviously we are waiting and doing our presentations, which is normal in every country that where we are facing with that, where we try to show how when you have tax on this industry, you start suffering in other parts of the tax collection because you reduce volumes, you reduce your workforce because of that. You have a lower net income that at the end of the day pays the industry will pay a lower income taxes and all of that. And it's similar to what we saw in Mexico in 2013-2014. No? It's important that for us also to show that when you have a discriminatory tax to only one industry, that has very negative effects. That is, but at the end of the day, some of the different governments in the 10 countries where we are have scarce resources, and they are looking to have more tax revenue, no? Wherever they can find. So it's the tax in the Philippines is something that we need to keep our eyes open. No? Thank you, Alex.
Our next question comes from Jose Jordan from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. My main question has been asked, but thanks for keeping it, enforcing the one question rule. I guess the question I would ask now is just, seems like things are also turning a bit negative in Central America, so if you could just give us a little color as to what you expect sort of for the second half of the year and next year in this market, where should we expect volumes and profitability?
Good morning, Jose. Good question. Central America, although small, the four countries start adding up to a good amount for us. But let me just run a little bit in the different countries. Guatemala, remember that we have a very difficult union environment. I think that after more than 13 years of being in Guatemala, we finally came to agreements with the unions whereby we will have capacity to be a little bit more efficient in our production and distribution system. And because of that, we are now in agreement with the unions that we will have pre-sale in Guatemala. So we didn't have it. So in Guatemala, we have the expenses related to the introduction of pre-sale. In other words, in addition to the delivery guy, now you have a pre-seller. Before it was what we call conventional route, that the guy will exit the distribution center with the truck and do the sale and the distribution and everything. So we have, it's a more costly operating model, and we are still not benefiting from the additional volume that Crescent is going to bring. It's something that we'll look in the short term to improve on that. We think that pre-sale will bring about important growth in volumes. In Nicaragua, is doing very well. We are actually installing two new production lines, one for returnable and one for one-way. It's going. We have good pricing. We have good profitability. So Nicaragua, it's in that sense the star of the four countries in Central America. Panama, we have done some changes in our organization in the commercial area. We are starting to see a little bit better performance. It's a very tough environment from the retail system because it's the most important clients are the so-called the Chinese clients that act as a cartel. They are bringing Coca-Cola in cans from Florida, given the fact that there are many ships that go through the Panama Canal. So we are starting to get revenues from the Florida bottler through the Coca-Cola company, is the one that helps us in all these transshipment problems. And Panama, I think that we are starting to see a little bit better execution at the end of the day. So Panama is still with soft numbers, but I think that improved. And the one, as we say in Mexico, the little black rock in the rice is Costa Rica. Costa Rica, we have very good pricing. Very, very good pricing. It's the highest price we have in that area. We are having very tough competition with Florida Pharma Nice, that has a beer monopoly, and they are the distributors of Pepsi. So they have lowered the price of Pepsi importantly. My read of this is that they are trying to get some additional volumes in the country, mainly to avoid the Pepsi franchise being taken away from them and probably given to Amber. That will be a route for someone to start selling beer, and that's what I'm trying to say is, in my opinion, this is totally a beer defensive proposition by them. It's because in order for them to protect their monopoly they have in Costa Rican beer. So we have not been able to increase prices in Costa Rica because of the our competitors lowering prices. We are doing some inroads with teas because for Florida Harmonized, teas is a very important category. So we are working in that direction. And we are also working in trying to have a more integrated delivery system together with Estrella Azul, which is our dairy company that we have 50-50 with the Coca-Cola company that has obviously dairy, but also has a very important presence of juices that are short life and that you deliver cold. So those are the strategies in Costa Rica, well, in Panama. This is the Azul strategy that I will describe, but Panama and Costa Rica is some of the areas where we are working on. So it's a tough environment in summary, I'll say, Guatemala, we expect for Trisel to start bringing some additional volume and better control on the prices. Nicaragua is doing very well. Panama is improving with all this that I mentioned, this additional strategy with Estrella Azul. And Costa Rica, we have hopes to start improving execution in the teas and get to better grasp with our competitors there with the lower price of the Pepsi products. Okay? Thank you, sir.
Our next question comes from Luca Chapicha from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the question. Just a couple of quick follow-ups, if I may. One on Brazil, I just wanted to confirm where you stated that volumes were up 5% in July on an organic basis, and also how does that compare for the quarter for Brazil only, excluding acquisition, just to confirm the swing. And then the second question, maybe just a very general one, I guess more on semantics. I see that, you know, the Philippines now is reported within a Asian division, which in fact all includes the Philippines. So I'm trying maybe to overread there, but is this an indication that you may have more, you know, the ambition to add more territories if they come up? Maybe if you just refresh your views of where you stand in the idea of potentially expanding in Asia once the Philippine operations are on track, and they seem to be on track. So, you know, whether that there is something that you could look at with interest in a relatively short period of time, that would be great.
Good morning, Luca. First, Brazil. Brazil, what I was mentioning is that during the month of June, we saw a 5% growth on an organic basis in Brazil. For the quarter, that on an organic basis, we have a decline of around 10%. So that's what I was trying to signal, is that it looks like we are here in Brazil, we will see a second half of the year which is better in Brazil with respect to the consumer. With the Asian division, it's yes, I mean, the answer is yes. We have this opportunity to continue expanding in Asia, and it's still probably a few years ago, but it's been a few years ahead. As you said, first of all, we need to be comfortable with the Philippines. As you said, we are obviously improving the operation of the Philippines quarter by quarter, and that's good. It's a good signal. As we mentioned, we have the threat of these taxes that could derail a little bit the profitability of the Philippines also. We are doing all the lobbying efforts that we can in that area. But the agreement that we have with the Coca-Cola company is that assuming that we exercise the call on the other 49% of the Philippines, and just as a reminder, the final date for that is at the beginning of 2020. If we do that, we will have an option also to look at a preferred alternative or preferred option to look at some other territories in Asia that are owned by the Coca-Cola company. We are still in the mood, if you ask Confensa, we feel positive about the Philippines and positive about the option of potentially acquiring some of these territories in the future. It's a challenging market. We have discussed this in previous conference calls. I think that we are doing well from a portfolio point of view, very well from the supply chain, especially production point of view. We are struggling a little bit on how to serve the very small retailers, the so-called sarisaris, that will be equivalent to our bronze clients in some of Latin America countries that have very small drop sizes, and we are still struggling to find this or to fine-tune how much would you go to third-party distributors versus having your own delivery system and having the information or the benefit of going directly, but at the expense of having this direct distribution, which is sometimes it looks like, in some cases, it looks like a high expense compared to the one case per month that some of these clients buy, which is very, very small drop size, no? Okay. Thank you.
At this time, I'd like to turn the conference back to Mr. Trevino for any additional or closing remarks.
Well, thank you for your interest in Coca-Cola FEMSA, and as always, our team is available to answer any of your remaining questions. Thank you. Have a nice day.
And this does conclude our presentation for today. Thank you for your participation. You may disconnect.